Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. This is the Progressive Commentary Hour. Today, we're going to be exploring in depth the question of misinformation, out-and-out lies, and obfuscation when it comes to telling the people about the truth on the lethality, the safety, the efficacy, or lack thereof, of the coronavirus vaccines and the different parts of our program that we're all supposed to follow and mandate. My guest is Dr. Jessica Rose. Jessica is an immunologist, board certified. She's also a molecular biologist. She has, I believe, two PhDs, and she studies in detail pathogenic infections. She has specialized in cytomegalovirus, HIV, anthrax, and hepatitis B, and now also COVID-19. She has written many peer-reviewed journals, and up to this moment, she's had a spotless, highly praised career. And yet now, she's willing to tell us information based on documentation using the federal government's own vaccine adverse event reporting system, VAERS, that is shocking. She's going to claim, as you will hear her, when I ask her, how many people would you guess, based upon your research, have died from the vaccine? But you gotta listen carefully to what she's saying, because she is saying that based on a Harvard study and other studies, only about 1% of all adverse reactions are reported. That means 99% are not. Therefore, the average person, epidemiologist, might say, well, okay, if you have, let's say, argument's sake, 20,000 deaths, then let's go 20,000 and then multiply that. No, she's being very conservative, because I asked her to be extremely conservative. So she's using a very low number of about 41. And she comes up with a figure of 700,000 deaths. Think of that for a moment. If the New York Times were to do the same research using the same CDC and FDA figures, they would come to the same outcome, or even more. And yet, there won't be a word about this said anywhere. She'll be banned from all social media platforms. Her paper will be expunged. She'll be attacked, personally and professionally. And yet she's never been attacked in her career. She's fighting back. She's fearless. She's going to tell you the truth in ways you've not heard before. In today's New York Times, on the front page, there is an article with a pediatrician talking about how good it is to vaccinate children young, because the children need the immunity from the vaccine. Okay, let's say that she is right in her statements. Where's her proof? Show us your documentation. You're a pediatrician. You're not an immunologist. And by the way, how many of the conditions have you seen in the past in your career where children took all their vaccines, were very pro-vaccine nation, and they ended up with autism spectrum disorder, learning disabilities, brain damage, autoimmune conditions? And did you pay no attention? You still went ahead with the official acceptance that all vaccines are safe and effective, even when your own patients you vaccinated may have ended up being victimized. What is your background in immunology? How many patients have you worked with specifically on their immune systems based upon your detailed training? You don't have a background? Well, my guest does. Now, I'm live now. However, yesterday, because Dr. Rose is in another country and because of the time difference, I had to do what is known as a pre-record. So what you're going to see in a moment when she comes on is our interview from yesterday, because she wasn't able to be here in our studios today at this time. Everything that she is saying prior to the interview, we ask her to have supporting documentation from mainstream peer-reviewed journals to back her up. She has volumes. She also has been in contact with hundreds of mainstream board-certified physicians, as well as outstanding scientists from around the world. In no small measure because they've been using her data because of her level of scholarship. So I'm putting this into proper perspective, so when you hear what she has to say, it may be startling. It may be something that you cannot imagine to be true, but it's all true. And all the footnotes have been listed, and we always print all of the documentation supporting any of my guest statements. So now to one of the most amazing interviews you've ever heard, especially since the New York Times chose not to talk with her, who's an actual immunologist and a scientist and knows the truth about COVID-19, a truth that we have not been allowed to know up to this point. Now to my guest, Dr. Jessica Rose.
Nice to have you with us today. There's a great deal of controversy now about those who have chosen, no matter what the legitimacy of their choice, not to be vaccinated. But several of those individuals, or several percentage of those individuals, are concerned about whether the vaccines are actually safe and effective, and based upon their own life experience, the state of their immunity, whether they have already been infected and have natural immunity, is it wise to take the vaccines? And what the mainstream media and the government is refusing to reveal is the honest outcome of side effects, deaths, and especially in those like younger people, children, and athletes, and people who are in good shape who don't have comorbidities. So we're only getting part of the story, and if you only get part of the story, yes, vaccines are safe and effective, take the vaccines or take the boosters if you've already had the vaccines, and let life return to normal. And if that's all they know, then of course most people would say that's a reasonable approach, since we almost all are pro-vaccine. I'm certainly pro-vaccine, but I'm pro-safe and effective vaccine, and this has been shown to be neither thus far. Everything has been promises. So when you look at the larger picture and you do research and you're a methodical researcher, what do you see that the mainstream media is leaving out of the equation to condemn people and try to punish those people in some way by bringing almost a vaccine apartheid into South Africa, into Israel, into the United States, into Great Britain and other countries? The forum is yours. Take your time.
Well, the mainstream media appears to be using a lot of guilt trips on the public, which is kind of bizarre to me, because if the products were safe and effective, they wouldn't need to be making the public feel guilty one way or the other. Now, on the subject of safety of these products, it is my opinion that they are not. But this is always the judgment call of the individual, of course. Each person has to do their own assessment, risk-benefit assessment, based on safety and efficacy data. But from my point of view, based on the vaccine adverse event reporting system data of the United States, and also based on the phase 3 clinical trial data and subsequent trial data sets, I would not call these products safe by any definition. The total number of adverse event reports filed to VAERS for this year, and we've basically completed 1 year of the injection rollouts, is 1,700% higher than the average of the past 10 to 30 years. So what that means is that if you take the average number of adverse event reports for all the vaccines combined over the past 10 years or 30, you'll get approximately somewhere between 35,000 and 39,000 adverse event reports. And what we're at now, and this is only for the domestic data, is 705,991. This is not typical. The range of the types of adverse event reports is staggering. There are well over 10,000 different types of adverse event reports, which cover just about every system of the human body that you can think of, cardiovascular, neurological, immunological, hepatological. Every single thing you can imagine going wrong in the human body is being reported to go wrong. And on the subject of death, because this is probably the most severe adverse event report that you can file, I believe I just did a statistic today, we're thousands of percent of an increase in reporting over the past 30 years. So for all the reports for all the vaccines combined over the last 30 years, we're at about between 130 and 155 per year that were filed to VAERS. And we're currently at 10,856 in the domestic data set alone filed to VAERS. And by the way, none of these numbers that I'm reporting account for the underreporting factor. And it's somewhere between 31 and 100. So whatever these numbers are that I'm reporting, we have to multiply them by some underreporting factor, depending on what you decide that it should be. So yeah, adverse event reporting off the charts. And as everybody probably knows by now, the efficacy of these products is not looking good either. In Israel, for example, most of the people who were double injected ended up getting the Delta variant. And subsequently now we're on to the Omicron variant for which the injections are probably not providing protective immunity against either. But that's another subject matter. So to summarize, safety and efficacy are the two cornerstones of measurement in terms of whether, you know, vaccines or injections should be maintained in a rollout into the human population. And I think that these particular products, these COVID-19 products, they fail on both counts. I think that's pretty much been shown in the data.
You've had the advantage of looking carefully at the data from Israel. Now, Israel is arguably one of the most vaccinated senior populations in the world, as far as their total compliance, and not just with the two initially, but now with the additional booster shots, which are also vaccines. If you were to take the best educated guess you could based upon the data that you have, and this is where you live in data, and your work has not been refuted, your work you've published in peer-reviewed journals, you've taught on the subject, what would be your best guesstimate of, because you said it, there's a large swing between how many are actually adversely affected and died versus those that are officially reported. And one caveat to that, we just had a segment with a board-certified physician in Canada who said that he personally had taken over 20 of his patients who had direct adverse effects from the vaccine, and they refused to do anything with him. They were not posted anywhere. Everything he could possibly do to go directly to the VAERS system was objected by those in authority, and nobody wanted to know how bad the vaccines were. That was his contention. So he said, there's a lot more people being injured than what the government's willing to acknowledge. And the question is, why? Why wouldn't the government want to be honest and tell people, this is the you know, take the vaccine if you choose, but here at least is the truth about the side effects and how severe they can be and what they could be. And at this point, as you said, you have over 10,000 different side effects. I'm not aware of any medication that's ever had 10,000 different side effects.
Right.
And more people have died because of this, even using their figures, than any other vaccine in history, including cumulatively in the last 10 to 30 years. So wouldn't we want to be honest for informed consent? And isn't informed consent part of the cornerstone also with safety and efficacy, is you can trust us because everything that we know that could go wrong with you getting a vaccine, we're telling you up front. And therefore, we believe that you are best served by honesty. So could you tell us what you believe the actual number is more likely to be of death and injury than what we're being reported? Because you're also aware of the Harvard study that showed as little as 1% of adverse effects are all that's being reported, which means 99% are likely not reported or some measure thereof.
Yeah. Well, let's start with the domestic data death reports. So VAERS is just one reporting system, by the way, and it is underreported. This is known, as you said. There have been studies done on this that claim that only 1% of adverse event reports are ever filed to VAERS. And everyone should know that it's very difficult to file an adverse event report to VAERS. It's even harder in Canada because VAERS is volunteer. So you can file a VAERS report and it will somehow, after being vetted, hopefully end up in the front end database. But in Canada, if you're a physician and you file five adverse event reports, five adverse event reports might never make it into the system because somebody decides that they don't belong. So that step is removed from VAERS. So the foreign data set is another data set that you can download from VAERS, which represents probably a combination of US citizens living outside of the US making VAERS reports. And also I've heard that it could be overflow from other reporting systems. When you combine the deaths from both of these data sets, you get somewhere near 22,000. And so if you use the most modest underreporting factor, which is the one that I've calculated, which is the number 31, and I calculated this from the Pfizer phase 3 clinical trial data set, then you get somewhere close to 675,000 deaths. So again, this is very modest. And I'm sorry, there's noise on my ceiling. I hope you can't hear that.
I don't hear it.
Good. It's bothering me a lot. There are probably, by my best guess, millions and millions of adverse events being caused by these products in the world. And what's also significant to note is that if you look at VAERS, if you look at the yellow card system in the UK, the UDR system, SA VAERS, South African VAERS, and there's also an Australian adverse event data collection system. The patterns of safety signals are the same. For example, we're all noticing myocarditis in young children, which is above background reporting rates. I've also written a paper about this. So By no means are the numbers or the types of adverse events being reported in the context of these products normal or acceptable or historically equatable. And to answer your question, why wouldn't they want to be transparent and to promote informed consent, like present people with the potential risks of these products in addition to the potential benefits? I mean, the only answer I have for that is that it would go against the program. You know, it would go against the profits. It might discourage people from being injected. And for some reason, which I can't figure out for the life of me, the people in charge of this program are hell-bent on getting recurrent injections in the arms of every single human being, regardless of age, regardless of health, regardless of vulnerability, regardless of geographic location. I mean, it's absolutely bizarre from an immunological point of view, from a virological point of view, from a vaccinological point of view. I mean, none of us, none of the experts who've been looking at this for 2 years can figure this out. There's no logic and there's no science behind this. So,
but there is profit, massive profit.
There's a lot of profit. Yes.
And we know how culpable people making that kind of money could be and tempted. Yeah. That is not to suggest everyone, but the corporation's primary interest is return on investment for their for the stockholders.
Absolutely. So that, any hesitation from the public, I mean, imagine if all of a sudden all the parents found out that these products are dangerous for their kids, which VAERS is showing, by the way, after just a few short weeks of injecting 5 to 11-year-olds, and they became hesitant. I mean, basically that would destroy, it would start a trend, I think, in the world, and it would ripple through the populations of the world, and it would destroy their child injection rollout because they haven't started putting these things into kids in Australia yet. So there's still a chance to stop that there. And that would put a big damper on their plan because children, of course, represent a large proportion of the population of humans, and that population is growing as well. And then it would put a damper on their plan to put it on the schedule, like you can't go to school unless you've had these shots, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that's also in their plans.
As a person studying statistics and doing analysis of these anomalies, did you find it odd that in the United States, Great Britain, and other countries, Canada, that from 1919 to 1920, there were zero deaths from flu, influenza, and now in 2021, you don't see any CDC statistics on death from that, where we normally have anywhere from 30,000 to 70,000 deaths in a given year, and now all those deaths are gone, and no one is talking about that.
Yeah, why is no one talking about that? Where did they go?
Yeah. Also, isn't it interesting, and this has never happened in my lifetime, and I've been a scientist for a long time, senior research fellow and head of the anti-aging department at the Institute of Applied Biology for 33 years, published peer-reviewed journals, done over 50 clinical studies. So I'm used to, like yourself, studying the literature and also having one-on-one contact. And what you see is the people who've had one-on-one contact, the board-certified physicians, emergency medicine people, cardiologist, et cetera, pulmonologist, none of their advice, none of their experience is taken seriously. To the contrary, they're being attacked in mass. And these are some heavyweight people who've never had a controversial moment in their careers. And now whole careers are being just canceled by the thousands of these people. They're joining together and they're fighting back and they're coming forward. But they're the ones who are saying use medications, and including nutrients like vitamin D and zinc and vitamin C and quercetin and ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine from the very beginning. And their patients weren't dying. Their patients were overcoming the disease in a matter of days and not going on to the hospital. And yet Fauci said, no treatment whatsoever until send them home, have them stay there until their lips are purple, then come to the ICUs. And at that point, it was frequently too late. And then give them remdesivir, which the study showed as upwards of 25% death rate. And yet that was the only primary drug that was used in these centers. And also giving them the respirators, and that wasn't the best thing. So I'm seeing two dynamics that I've never seen in my life. I'm seeing orthodox medicine fighting orthodox medicine. I'm seeing independent science fighting corporate science. I'm finding independent media fighting corporate media. I'm finding independent bureaucrats terrified of telling the truth. And when they do, they're attacked, talking about what goes on inside of Pfizer and Moderna and any of these other companies and in the governmental agencies. So we're seeing a conflict, and the media is not covering any of this conflict. There's only one truth in their mind, that is take your vaccines and things will return to normal, wear your mask, social distance, and social isolation now. And yet, each one of these could be deconstructed in an open and honest society. You allow room for debate in science. You allow people with different points of view to have their day. We're allowing none of that. Censorship and destroying people who dare speak the truth. Dr. Hoff in Canada, he's the one who said his patients, when they were given other therapies, survived. All right?
Yep.
All of them, all except one, didn't have to go to the hospital. And he's talking about a lot of patients, and yet when he suggested that the adverse event system report on the adverse events, they refused to do so. Could you address this larger corruption of science issue? And do you see that science, at least legitimate science, has been challenged and is being corrupted?
I think it always was, but I think we're just seeing its ugly head a lot more clearly now because of this, which is kind of like a beautiful irony. Censorship is rampant. I mean, that alone to me should be enough for anybody to think twice about whether or not what's happening is okay. I mean, even the people who are walking around thinking that everything is fine, I mean, they have to have some feeling inside them that something's not right, because in no time in history that I can recall, although I haven't been alive for that long, a complete lack of balance in terms of a dialogue. And the balance is so bizarre. I mean, the sides are corporate media and scientists. I mean, what is that? Why is it that medical doctors are being silenced? Why are they losing their licenses? These are people who are trained professionals. They went through med school, you know, they went through the ropes. They've been practicing for decades. They're using their medical judgment. I mean, it's absolutely, it's unprecedented. And for anybody who's on the inside, I suppose, like the nurse practitioners and the doctors who are witnessing this, and the scientists who are trying to publish papers and not able to do so for the last year or a year and a half, or in my case, published and have my paper censored. I mean, it's just absolutely abhorrent. The thing that really bothers me about this is that all of us, like the grown-ups, the middle class, the upper class, the lower class, it doesn't matter who you are, we're all being treated like slow children. Pardon my metaphor, but we're all being treated like children who can't make up our own minds and who have no life experience, and as if we have no idea what's best for ourselves. We have no experience. That's how I feel that the public is being treated. I myself decided about 2 years ago what was going to be right for me, and that was to pay attention to what's going on, look at the data, watch how it changes, pay attention to adverse events as they rise in response to these injections, which they are. And keep reading a lot of scientific journals that are actually managing to publish good work. Preprint server is a very valuable source of information right now. A lot of those papers are never going to see the light of a publication, but they're still important to read. I'm not sure what else to say about it. I mean,
it's the corruption of science, and that's unfortunate.
Yeah.
But at least it's becoming apparent, as you said, and accurately so, very sentient comment, that we're now seeing what was there all along. We've had corruption in science for decades, special interest groups, and but now it's the journalists, the scientists, who are coming forward and speaking, who historically would have been quiet. And now you see people who live quiet lives. They're not. People who are retired, coming out of retirement, risking their entire legacy to tell the truth. I've never seen that before in my entire career. And so I'm optimistic that we've reached a tipping point as far as how much we're going to be pushed. And as you said, we're being treated as if we are slow, too slow to learn. You know,
yep.
And we're not.
Nope.
But here's the interesting part. These are problems that I've been wrestling with, and possibly you would also have had some challenges in this area, and you'll share with us the following. And any one of these you feel like taking on, please do. If you don't want to take any of these on, please don't. We would not have had the labeling of this as a pandemic unless there were enough positive tests showing cases of sick people to warrant a pandemic. In the process of making this a pandemic, they used a friend of mine, Dr. Carey Mullis, who won the Nobel Prize in chemistry and for discovering the PCR test. And he, in an hour and 54-minute interview with me, filmed in 1993, he said this test should not be used for telling someone that they are sick with a particular disease, because it won't do that. It's very good at what it does, but it's mainly in its amplifications. We're amplifying that piece of virus that could be new and could be old. It can tell us by up to a trillion times. So if we did it at a threshold, let's say, of 20 or less, we would have a more accurate picture. So the test itself was the wrong test to use to determine, are you positive? Then the New York Times, and I noticed the first time they did this, they made a positive test into a case. Well, anyone who is working with patients knows that a case is someone who is actively pathogenic. They are not asymptomatic. They're manifesting symptoms. That wasn't true. The vast majority of people, the vast, vast majority, were asymptomatic. They also said that everyone is equally susceptible. That also wasn't true because studies were showing comorbidities. Emphysema, heart disease, diabetes, and obesity were also strong comorbidities, with obesity being the number one. That they completely negated working with the people who had the comorbidities, and the Surgeon General never has said a word to this day about how to reverse or prevent these comorbidities, making yourself less susceptible. They never said a thing up to this point about innate immunity, like your immune system only exists with a vaccine. But no, our immune system is what keeps us alive. Breastfeeding is part of that innate immune buildup. And I work in immune system work and have my whole career. So I'm thinking, surely they're going to tell the American public how to go on a healthy plant-based diet, exercise, de-stress, meditation. Nothing.
Yeah, right.
Not a word. So the entire way they engineered the idea of making this a pandemic from simply a virus that could cause sickness and illness and death in those who are most susceptible, and therefore we were going to have to learn to live with it, that was all negated. That's one problem. The second problem was that they counted deaths from other causes as COVID exclusively, when the evidence clearly shows that only 7%, the FDA's own findings, were actually due to COVID by itself. So I started to do research here, and I wrote some articles on it. They were counting people who were dying in hospice care from a terminal cancer as COVID.
Yep.
That's insane. They were calling people in nursing homes who were there because they were dying and had heart disease and cancer, et cetera. The moment they went in and said it was COVID, all died of COVID. There were morticians, one who we had on this program from Great Britain, who said that the moment the COVID vaccines, you know, COVID was announced, suddenly people had died even in a motorcycle accidents were now COVID. So they were overcounting the COVID deaths, and by doing that, they artificially escalated the figures to a level of panicking people that they didn't want to be one of those potential dead. Yet when the biostatisticians and the epidemiologists and the mathematicians came in, including one who won the Nobel Prize, when they started looking at overall deaths, country by country and worldwide, there was not a great difference. There was not a pandemic level difference to justify this. So therefore, they were all attacked. From Stanford, Harvard, and from Oxford, they were all attacked personally. Everyone who signed the Great Barrington Edict, they were attacked. Anyone questioning the evidence was attacked. Anyone questioning the Imperial College artificial mathematical model of how many people were going to die in countries. And that was used by the Great Britain, by France, by Italy, and the United States and Germany as its model. They were attacked. You can't attack. And yet everything that was said by that person at Imperial College was shown to be wrong. I mean, tremendously wrong. So they had the wrong figures on death. They were using the wrong test to determine who was infected. They were using the wrong statistics saying that if you were positive, you were a case and therefore were symptomatic. So all this is what we're told. Take any part of this that you wish and show us from your perspective how you saw all this.
So the PCR thing is just... It's a way to drive the fear by counting cases. It's just what you said. PCR is a DNA amplification technique, and without sequencing, you can say nothing about the nature of what you're amplifying. And I found out in my research that there are some techs and labs who are using one set of primers instead of the multiple sets of primers that you're supposed to use in order to more properly, not properly, but more properly identify whether or not you're dealing with a virus, for example. Like if you have three fragments from a virus and they don't come from any other species, then you can more clearly define that. But it's insane. And you're right about the cutoff level as well. In the Atlantic provinces in Canada, there was a notification sent around to the lab techs to use a cutoff value of 45, which basically means when you amplify, you're going to detect everything. So naturally, what you're going to end up with is something close to what they found, which is a 95% false positive rate. So this whole PCR thing, which still continues to this day, is a load of crap. Kerry couldn't have said it better himself. It's not a test, by the way. I would never call it that. As for the deaths, yeah. And by the way, this is why I don't go anywhere near any data that involves cases or deaths, because I think both of those numbers are completely not reliable for different reasons. The deaths were counted as COVID deaths because people were incentivized by money. It's very simple. If you write on someone's death certificate that they died of COVID, then you get like a lot of money. Your hospital gets a lot of money. Hospitals need money to run too. So yeah, there was a lot of incentivization. We also know that. But funnily enough, as soon as the death count starts to go up as a byproduct of these injections, nobody's talking about that. No incentivization there. And the last point, I don't remember what it was, but it's the whole thing has been a complete circus. That's the best word I can describe it. If the public health policy officials, if the government leaders, if anybody was serious about putting an end to this, antibody testing would be prolific. There would be some kind of real way to assess whether or not somebody is naturally immune. That's what I was going to say. The other thing I'm hearing from the public is this very odd sense of the attempt by the overlords, I don't know who they are, to destroy the entire concept of an immune system that functions. I mean, I've heard from people that, you know, whether I don't understand how they don't know better, but they don't, that, you know, they don't even realize that they're alive only because of this gorgeous thing called the immune system. We coexist, we've co-evolved over millions of years with viruses, retrovirus. Our genome is 8% retrovirus, okay? We co-evolve with these things, we live with them. We live with bacterial pathogens, viral pathogens, fungi, like everything. We're a beautiful soup of all sorts of different things. And our immune system and the systems of these other organisms are exquisitely balanced. That's why when you take antibiotics, for example, you don't feel so good afterwards because you're destroying a lot of important creatures that that live in your gut, for example. So it's not exactly the same thing, but if you allow your innate immune system, which is the, you know, a large part of that are these mucosal mediators that line your nose and upper respiratory tract to deal with upper respiratory pathogens like coronaviruses, flu viruses, and cold viruses, you're going to have a lot better go of it. You're going to have a less severe disease prognosis. If you have one at all, you probably won't even know that you were exposed to these viruses. You're going to have a lot better time of it because the innate immune system is extremely powerful and has these mediators specifically designed to deal with nosocomial pathogens, as opposed to these direct line specific antigen charging injections, which, by the way, they don't stay at the site. They get anyway, that's a whole other story, this mRNA stuff. I mean, these aren't vaccines. Maybe I should qualify that, but the immune system is very capable in the human being of dealing with COVID, especially in kids and healthy people. And it seems like they're trying to erase this entire concept by saying, you're dead unless you get injected. I mean, it's just insane. I mean, Biden was saying this stuff, you know, about Christmas holidays. And if you're not injected, then you're going to be in the hospital and you're going to have deaths. And I mean, I don't remember exactly what he said, but it was really bizarre. I mean, it's just bizarre. I don't have any other word for it.
There's one other aspect that I would like you to touch on, please. And that is, we were led to believe that the injection, the RNA vaccine, or biological implant, that's really what it is, going into the body would stay in the deltoid muscle on our shoulder and then get into the lymphatic system, et cetera. Now we know, and we've known for since the injections, we started to see when an autopsy was done that the spike protein was all over the body and proliferation was in the reproductive system of both men and women. And that should have set a big message, those who are pregnant or intending to become pregnant, you shouldn't be getting this vaccine because you could be jeopardizing your developing fetus. Now we start seeing a huge spike in miscarriages in healthy women who should have been able to carry full term, and they all had the vaccine. And I'm questioning the obstetricians, pediatricians, and others. Why aren't you warning people? Why aren't you seeing the scientific literature? Because it's in the literature. I mean, it's in the legitimate peer-reviewed literature. But also, people are not aware of once in the body how many of these spike proteins can be manufactured. I believe that the latest count was one single injection could cause the body to produce about 40 trillion. And the trouble is where the protective effect wears out depending upon a person's existing state of immunity, but they're finding around 3 months. And so then you're looking at forever injections. As long as Anthony Fauci's controlling stuff, he'll have people taking, you know, an injection every 3 or 4 months. And then at the same time, I looked at all the peer-reviewed literature on autoimmunity. The best figure that we could come up with, the most accurate, and we looked at every journal, is about 130.5 million Americans suffer from some form of autoimmune condition, which at the very least means that their immune system is already stressed. I deal with people all the time. I've counseled tens of thousands of people with autoimmune conditions. The one thing I do is I don't overstress the immune system. I take stressors off, by the way, which is one of the reasons that a lot of cancer therapy is working today, is because they've gone from strict chemotherapy that just kills cells, living cells as well as cancerous cells, healthy cells versus cancer cells, and you hope you kill enough cancer cells before you kill enough healthy cells to die, and unfortunately about 50% of all people using chemotherapy die of the chemotherapy. That's never discussed. But be that as it may, the new immune modulating therapy is to modulate the person's immune system, and therefore they're getting better results. So now we have people who should not have the vaccine, but other therapies to help strengthen their immune system, but not overstimulate it because it's already overstimulated, and no discussion at all about them. If you're a cancer patient, if you've had multiple chemotherapies, if you've had organ transplant, they're not making exceptions in their statements. They're making it seem like everybody get your vaccine no matter what. And you're saying, but I've already gotten COVID and I'm healthy, and there are over 100, at least last time I saw, which is 3 weeks ago, 130 studies showing that I have a much better immune response than any vaccine could ever give, because I'm getting the whole virus response. Right. Therefore, my macrophages, lymphocytes, et cetera, are giving me a whole protective, where the spike is only giving me part of that viral expression. So therefore, are you saying that I should take a completely healthy immune system that is better able to fight in the future and then vaccinate it with known adverse side effects? And do you have any clinical studies that you've actually done showing a group of people, maybe 20,000 people who have natural immunity but no vaccine, and compare that with people who had all the vaccines and then a group that got the vaccines on top of natural immunity? Now, I believe the only country to have done anything similar to that, or at least evaluate prospectively, was Israel, when they saw that the people who were not vaccinated, who got COVID, had far less death, far less hospitalizations, less severe problems than those who end up with worst case scenario, who were double vaccinated, then got COVID on top of that, and they got a worse situation. Outside of that, we're telling people probably 40% of the American population already has had COVID. Certainly a lot of children have and don't even know it. Could you address those issues, please?
Yeah, well, on the autoimmunity issue, which is what, you know, all of us, and by us, I mean the immunologists and the virologists and the doctors who saw what was coming with these products, we're just starting to see the first massive tidal wave of these occurrences as a byproduct of these injections. And what everybody should know is that people with autoimmune conditions are a part of the exclusion criteria list in the phase 3 clinical trials. So they're not in the trials. So there's no safety data for these people. And yet they're being pushed to be injected with these products under the auspices that they need them because they have autoimmune conditions. And it couldn't be more opposite, in my opinion. If you, by the way, this is me giving advice as an immunologist. If you have a pre-existing autoimmune condition, I would not go near these products. There are MS resurgences. There are latent viral infections coming back to the surface. And the reason why I'm mentioning this, I know this isn't autoimmune, but there seems to be a pattern arising in the literature and also in the adverse event data of immune compromisation. And we're not just talking about the adaptive or the acquired immune branch, which are the T cells and the B cells that respond specifically. We're talking about the innate responses being dysregulated as well. And this is really serious, because what one group found actually recently was that not only are these people going to have a worse time upon challenge with COVID or new variants of COVID, they're going to lose their immunity against not only the latent viruses that are laying dormant in their bodies, but other pathogens, like I mentioned before, the ones that we live mutualistically and commensally with, like fungi and bacteria. We might lose our balance, our healthy ecosystem with these pathogens, and they may become what we call opportunistic infections, which is what we're starting to see. And I find this absolutely terrifying that we are seeing this coming out in the literature. We're seeing CD8 T cells, which are the killer T cell populations, which kill virally infected cells being dysregulated. We're seeing various anti-inflammatory and pro-inflammatory cytokine profiles being completely dysregulated. We're seeing in almost every single person hyperinflammation. And on the subject that you mentioned of most people having some kind of either autoimmune condition, or if we're just talking about low-level chronic inflammation, which I guarantee about 99% of human beings have right now, no matter how healthy you are. If you're talking about injecting a product that causes, that stimulates inflammatory responses via the mechanism of action of the spike protein, it's literally like pouring gasoline on a fire. And we're seeing that again in the adverse event data. So if you have, this is what I was getting on with about the antibody testing as well. We need to get serious with our governments about ending this. We need to get serious about proving once and for all that we've had COVID. And basically what that means is that you're fine forever. You have long lasting robust immunity against COVID, and probably you have cross-reactive protection against other things as well, by the way. So we need to get really serious about putting an end to the nonsense. We have effective drug regimens now, off-label drugs. We have very effective measures. Nobody needs to go to the hospital, not even our elders. We need to classify the vulnerable populations if we have, you know, the elderly and people who are immune compromised already. I'm talking about like the end goal now, but we need to tackle the bear like for real. And that means putting an end to these lies. This whole thing is a constructed lie, and it's becoming really dangerous, because if people keep injecting themselves with these products, these damages are going to be cumulative in certain people, and we still haven't identified which people the damages are being done to. And it could be that it's only the people who have pre-existing autoimmunity, for example, but we don't know. And we don't know for sure if a woman is in her first or second trimester pregnancy, it seems very clear from the data that you shouldn't get injected. I mean, if you were going to ask me, I would say absolutely you shouldn't go near any injection or medication or new product if you're in your first or second trimester, because you shouldn't change things up, you know, because you're kind of in, you know, a delicate state. Maybe once in your third, things are different. But we need to start saying these things very loud and clear, because no matter how much denial there is from the governing bodies or the people who own the VAERS data, for example, about how no deaths are occurring as a byproduct of these injections and no spontaneous abortions are occurring as a byproduct of these injections, you can't say that, because we don't know. And the onus is on them, if they're saying that, to prove it. I dare you.
Trouble is, they control the media, and the media controls the message. Thank goodness that you're out there. I have a lot of respect for you and your work. You didn't have to take on the establishment. You did by being honest, and that means that you will be attacked. They'll try to erase you. They'll try to destroy you. But in the end, truth will win out. Thank you very much for being on with our Progressive Commentary Hour today with us, Dr. Rose.
You're so welcome. I'm here anytime, and I appreciate you very much as well. It's excellent work.
We are all joining arms, all of us, everyone in public health, plus activists, plus the victims. We're joining together. This is not about politics. This is not about right, left, rich, poor. As you said, all classes are involved. Let us stand up and say no more lies, no more obfuscation, no more special interest, no more self-dealing that we've seen rampant at this point. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for watching and listening. Have a nice day.
Mother, there's too many of you crying. Brother, there's far too many of you dying. You know.